Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for tuning in to the podcast this week. And thank you to our listener, Catherine, for suggesting this week's case. We will be taking next week off. It's been really busy lately, so it's been hard to find time to research and record or work on the podcast at all. So I think next week we'll replay an older episode for some of you. It may be the first time you hear it if you haven't listened to all of our episodes. So keep an eye out for that if you're interested. Otherwise, we will be back the week after next. I will warn you that there will be mention of suicide in this case. All right, let's get into it. Nancy McDuxton was 52 years old at the time of her disappearance in 2003. Nancy lived in Belmont, California, in the San Francisco Bay Area with her husband of 31 years, Bruce. Nancy and Bruce had two grown children together, a 25-year-old son and 22-year-old daughter, as well as a 1-year-old grandchild. Nancy's friends and family described her as a wonderful person who lived for her children. And she made a career out of working with children. Nancy was the director of a preschool in Belmont, where she dedicated many years of service. She was highly respected by both her colleagues and the parents of her students. Nancy's friends said young parents even relied on her for her valuable advice and insight. Nancy was dependable and hardworking, and it sounded like much of her life revolved around her work. Her husband, Bruce, was an attorney, so I'm sure they were both busy with their professional lives at that time. Nancy took Monday, August 11th, 2003, off from work, leaving a note there saying that she was heading to Davenport to hike for the day. Now, the students weren't set to start the school year until the next month, September, but I suspect the staff was busy preparing for the students in the upcoming school year. When Nancy left her home around 8:30 a.m., she told her daughter, who lived at home with them, that she was headed out to hike, but other reports say she mentioned she was going shopping. Regardless, Nancy left a note for her husband to let him know she was headed out to Davenport for the day. I've said Davenport a couple of times now, and you're probably wondering where that is. So Davenport is about 50 miles or 80 kilometers south of Belmont, where Nancy lived. Davenport is just off Highway 1, which runs along the coast, and it's a census-designated place with only a few hundred residents and a few businesses. So if Nancy wanted to shop that day, she likely wouldn't leave the San Francisco Bay Area to shop in Davenport. However, she could go hiking in this area. In fact, Nancy was known to hike in this part of Santa Cruz County by herself about once a month. So there was nothing particularly atypical about Nancy's decision to take this time to recharge and just have a day to herself. Frankly, this sounds very appealing. I would love to have a day like this.
So a 50-mile drive from San Francisco to Davenport is probably what, an hour and a half drive?
Right.
Do you know if the note mentioned anything about, I'd assume it's an all-day affair and she's going to be back that evening?
I don't know if the note said exactly when she planned to be home by, but the presumption was that this was a day trip and she'd be back that evening. There were
so
no
not
plans.
An overnight.
Yeah, there were no plans for her to stay overnight. So Nancy's behavior and mood that morning were typical for her. However, coworkers who saw her the previous day described her as particularly hyper, a word that stood out to me. So this led them to believe she might have needed some time to unwind. And I don't know exactly why they saw her the day before, because it was a Sunday, unless she was working that Sunday or they all got together for one reason or another. Nancy did not return home later that day, and her husband, Bruce, reported her missing to the police the following morning, August 12th. Since Nancy told Bruce where she would be spending Monday, he searched the Davenport area after reporting Nancy as a missing person. Some sources say Bruce found Nancy's car, while others say the police found it. Either way, her 2001 Mazda MPV minivan was recovered the day after she took her day trip. Nancy's minivan was parked in a pull-off on Highway 1, about 5 miles or 8 kilometers north of Davenport between Scott Creek and Greyhound Rock. Recall that where she was visiting, the highway runs parallel with the coast. So where her car was parked, that pull-off or bluff was on the side of the highway that overlooks the Pacific Ocean. It was described as a scenic spot with plunging seaside cliffs. There were some interesting discoveries around and inside Nancy's van. Nancy's wallet was inside the van, containing $84 in cash, as well as credit cards. They also found some trinkets or gifts inside, including honey, an Ecuadorian doll, and some toys, items that Nancy hadn't previously owned, to anyone's knowledge. About 100 yards or 91 meters from Nancy's vehicle on the bluff was a folding chair she owned, her sunglasses, a bright pink sun hat, a blanket, and a nonfiction book by Bill Bryson about Australia called In a Sunburned Country. The way her items were arranged or set up seemed to indicate Nancy pulled over and may have been having a picnic or just lying out in that folding chair reading a book about Australia. However, reportedly, this specific location was interesting because it wasn't really the kind of spot where people would pull over to hang out or have a picnic. We also have to keep in mind where her belongings were. It was just yards away from the edge of an oceanfront cliff in an area known for dangerous tides. It was a several hundred foot plunge down to the ocean in this area.
Yeah, it sounds pretty scenic. So I'd imagine maybe she pulled over to have a snack before her hike just to fuel up.
That could be, but based on what I'm going to tell you, I don't know if Nancy actually went hiking that day. And of course, you don't know this yet, but we'll get more information on the timeline here. But it seems like this whole setup was more so at the end of her day, not at the beginning. But there was a serious concern that Nancy could have accidentally or even intentionally fallen into the ocean. So after the discovery of Nancy's car, the Santa Cruz County Search and Rescue Team, the County K-9 Unit, quickly organized searches for Nancy. They found nothing of value when searching on foot and by air. One fear they had was that she was clinging to the side of the cliff, but that was not the case. The canines tracked Nancy's scent to the edge of the cliff, which sounds concerning, and it could be, but we don't know if Nancy walked to the edge, looked out across the ocean, and turned around and walked back the same way she walked to the edge. The dog's capabilities were not so refined that they could determine if she walked back the same way she came. Now, if she had walked to the edge and then turned around and walked back in a completely different direction, the dogs should have been able to detect that path. So if she walked to the edge and turned around, she must have walked back the same way she got to the edge of the cliff. The police have said this scent tracking does not conclusively mean that her scent stopped there and she entered the water. The investigation was carried out by the Belmont Police since her home was in Belmont, along with the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office because of her car's location. Volunteers came out in droves to assist with searching, but also to help Nancy's family and law enforcement spread the word of her disappearance. Had she spent the day in this part of Santa Cruz County, maybe some people would have seen her and could be helpful witnesses. And there were people who saw Nancy that day or believed they saw her. A clerk at Davenport Cash Store and Restaurant saw Nancy in the store part of the establishment around 10 a.m., which does fit into the timeline because if Nancy left her home around 8:30 a.m., she could have made it to Davenport by 10, and this could have been her first stop. The clerk sold several items to Nancy, the items that were later found in her car that I mentioned. So this was the Ecuadorian doll, honey, and a few toys. The toys and doll sounded like they would be for her grandchild, and she could have purchased the honey for herself or someone else, I suppose.
Do we know if the clerk remembered any distinguishing factors about Nancy?
Not really. She remembered Nancy seemed upbeat and friendly, but other than that, they didn't have a lengthy conversation or anything. After Nancy left the store, she was spotted at the Whale City Bakery Bar and Grill, which is still in business today, presumably for a bite to eat between 10:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. From there, Nancy went to the Davenport post office and mailed at least 4 postcards to various friends and colleagues. When these people received the postcards, they described them as sort of bland or generic, yet friendly notes saying something along the lines of going hiking today, I had a nice time, or I finally took that vacation.
Seems a bit odd to send postcards when she's just going on a day trip, and especially someplace that she's been to frequently. And using the word vacation is also a little odd to me. I mean, I guess you could consider a 50-mile trip down south to a small town to go hike a vacation, but when I think of vacation, it's more a week or more.
And maybe she said something more like, finally took that time off. Maybe it wasn't exactly vacation, yeah. But I agree. I think it is interesting. I guess I just can't imagine sending postcards from somewhere if I'm just doing a day trip. And of course, we're scrutinizing this because we know she then disappears. So you're wondering, does this have something to do with this case? But I guess otherwise, it is just kind of a sweet gesture that you're thinking of your friends and colleagues while you're enjoying your day off. Then came the final, most curious sighting of all. Now, the key witness here was a waitress, but it's typically reported as though multiple witnesses saw Nancy during what I'm about to tell you. A waitress recalled serving who she believed was Nancy a few hours after she sent the postcards between 5:30 and 6:30 p.m. at the Davenport Cash Store and Restaurant. So the same place she purchased the trinkets earlier in the day. That on its own is not that surprising. She was probably hungry, but the waitress remembered Nancy being with a man. She said that Nancy and this man seemed to be familiar with each other, possibly romantically connected, but that Nancy did most of the talking.
Yeah, I mean, unless there was a clear showing of PDA, I think that observation could be pretty subjective. You know, for example, I think it was like 3 or 4 years into us dating. We were out to dinner and you had gone to the bathroom and a couple next to us asked if that was our first date, if we were on our first date. So yeah, I think...
Well, it's happened twice. Then it happened again. Like a year later where you went to the bathroom and I was alone at a table and the people next to me asked if we were on a first date. So completely wrong in these situations. I don't know what it is, but yeah, you're right. It's definitely subjective.
Yeah, I think they said that because they said our conversation was so lively. They thought it was a first date. But anyway, all that to say, I just think it could be subjective. She could have just been meeting up with a friend if it was her at all.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know how significant that aspect of the sighting is, but of course there is a chance they were very familiar with each other and even romantically involved. Nancy raved about her meal and, according to the waitress, seemed particularly elated. The pair paid in cash and left the restaurant together. The restaurant was located about 5 miles from Nancy's car's location. So if this is accurate, that would mean that Nancy went to the area where her minivan and belongings were found after this dinner. So that's what I was mentioning earlier when you suggested maybe she was hanging out before her hike, having a snack. Well, it seems like all of this got set up after this dinner, if this is her. And I referred to this woman as Nancy, even though we don't know for sure it was her. And I wondered why everyone seemed so confident that this was Nancy as I was researching. But I found one statement from law enforcement that they couldn't be certain that this woman was her. It was just that the waitress thought she looked like her when she saw a picture of Nancy, and we know she was in the area that day. The witnesses who saw her earlier in the day remembered her being alone. So if this was her, she met up with this man later in the day. Nancy was also not a local, so she wouldn't have been a regular customer at the restaurant and may have stood out in that regard, although this restaurant was right off the highway, so they could have had random people stopping in every day for all we know. And there was no mention of how busy the restaurant was that evening. The man was described as being in his 30s or 40s initially, but later that changed to being closer to Nancy's age, so early 50s. He was of Asian or Polynesian descent with salt and pepper hair, standing around 5'6" and weighing approximately 160 pounds. So a fairly generic description, but it could be more generic. Based on this information, the authorities developed a sketch. They edited this sketch about 2 weeks after Nancy disappeared because the original witness felt he looked too young. The differences between the sketches are subtle, though. They basically just made his face wider and tried to age him. The investigators were clear when they shared this sketch that this man was not considered a suspect. They had no proof that a crime had occurred, but they were interested in speaking with him. About 50 people early on came forward with tips on who this man could possibly be, but each one was a dead end. And we'll share this sketch on our Instagram page, Key the Case Podcast. You can check it out there and also let us know what you think of this case. Nancy's husband, Bruce, had no idea who Nancy could have been with. And I have to imagine this was hard and confusing for him to hear because there is a possibility, if this was her, that she was romantically involved with this mystery man. Her family felt stuck, but they were doing everything they could, like spreading flyers with Nancy's face, searching, talking with people in the area. And according to the Santa Cruz Sentinel, her nephew said, quote, "The plan is to get her face out to the public and hopefully get some information that will point us in another direction. We're in limbo right now. Nobody knows what to think. I don't know who the heck this mystery guy is. He should have surfaced by now unless it was something weird," end quote. I even wondered if Nancy ran into someone she knew that day and they shared a meal on a whim. Possibly even a parent of a former student who Bruce and other family members wouldn't necessarily know. But I'm not sure how likely that is, because then you would think that person would hear that Nancy disappeared after that and come forward. As law enforcement began to look into Nancy's life, they started to believe she knew she wouldn't be returning home or to work and had made long-term preparations for her absence, including arranging for someone to take over her position. However, Bruce disputed this claim, arguing that her plans were open for interpretation. One key finding was that Nancy left detailed instructions on administrative tasks, such as caring for the nursery's many animals. They had lizards, snakes, rabbits, you name it. They had a lot of animals. And Nancy was an animal lover, but if she only planned to be away for one day, as she told people, the instructions seemed more detailed than necessary. While this alone could suggest routine planning, the investigators stated they uncovered additional documents indicating a more permanent departure, suggesting Nancy did not intend to return in time for the school year that was set to start a few weeks after her disappearance.
Do we have any insight into what any of these documents entail? I mean, I'm assuming it's duties that she specifically handled that no one else had on the radar.
Right. They have not elaborated on what exactly these documents were, but I was thinking along the same lines that because she was the director of this preschool, there were probably responsibilities only she handled, or she knew that if she left, someone would need help finding supporting documents for whatever it may be. I mean, we all have those things at work, right? Where only we are handling them. And if we were suddenly gone, other people would probably figure it out eventually, but it would take some time. So it sounded like she was making it easier for them.
They sound very confident that these were left in the event that she was gone.
Yeah, they emphasize that someone expecting to return wouldn't typically make such extensive arrangements.
And she was only 52, right?
Yes.
So she probably didn't have retirement even on her radar whatsoever.
Probably not yet. I mean, some people retire early, but it sounded like she really loved her job. So no, retirement wasn't part of the discussion at that time.
Yeah, and I'm sure Bruce would have mentioned that if that was applicable here.
Yeah, and her colleague said this type of behavior was out of character for her too. It's not like this was the first time she took a day off from work. So it's reasonable that her coworkers would have had a good sense of her work habits. So this is concerning because if law enforcement is correct in their interpretation of her actions, that could point to potential suicide here or Nancy wanting to leave her life as she knew it. But if Nancy had plans to carry out either of those actions, there was no one in her life that was privy to this that we know of. And thinking about the possibility of suicide, it certainly would have taken Nancy's husband and family by surprise if that's what happened. But there were reported suicides in the location of Nancy's car. Some people had even driven off cliffs in the area. And her scent was tracked to the edge of the cliff, which could indicate she went over the edge. So the investigators wanted to know where Nancy would have ended up if she entered the ocean intentionally or accidentally in the vicinity of where her car was parked. They worked with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Office of Response and Restoration, and after studying the tides, they estimated that a body would have washed ashore between Santa Cruz and Monterey. So based on that, her body would have traveled south. This information was shared with the Coast Guard to assist in their patrols, and NOAA assisted in searching the ocean by boat and air to no avail. If Nancy entered the ocean on the day of her disappearance, her body never washed ashore, which does not definitively rule out suicide or an accident, but I don't necessarily know the probability of someone not coming to shore in a situation like this. Additionally, the local investigators worked with behavioral scientists from the FBI to develop a psychological profile of Nancy. This was an attempt to understand her frame of mind when she disappeared, but I didn't find much follow-up on this. Other than that, they didn't find any behavior indicative of depression or personal issues. But I don't know if you feel this way. Nancy feels kind of like a mystery within her own mystery. We really don't know that much about her, especially compared to other cases we've covered. And just because there may not have been clear signs that something was wrong, that doesn't mean everything was ideal in her life before she disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously never know what someone is going through, but I feel like her family or her coworkers would have known, you know, something was different about her in the weeks leading up to that. It is interesting that it did seem like she made preparations for her departure, which could play into the suicide theory. But I feel like those closest around her, they would have noticed something was off, unless she was very good at concealing it, which some people are.
Yeah. And I did notice that her colleague said she seemed particularly hyper the day before, which can happen with suicide. I'm not saying it always does, but sometimes there can be a shift in behavior like that. So I wondered, again, if that was meaningful or if she was just in a certain mood. You know, you don't know if that had anything to do with it. She could have been hyper because she had other plans that were not suicide and she planned to leave and she was excited about that. Over time, the police received thousands of tips and reviewed each one, but never came across anything substantial, even after Nancy's case received national coverage through programs like America's Most Wanted, Good Morning America, and the Montel Williams Show. Bruce, who, by the way, has been cleared since early on in the investigation, participated in these programs. And during the Montel Williams coverage, controversial psychic, the late Sylvia Brown, stated that the man Nancy was with was a cult leader and that Nancy was still alive and had joined a cult. It's an interesting theory, but there is no evidence of this. And since Nancy disappeared, there have been no confirmed sightings of her. Also, you'd think there might be signs that she was about to join a cult if that was the case. Or signs that Nancy was carrying on an affair or communicating with this mystery man leading up to her disappearance. I presume they looked into Nancy's phone call and internet activity, and there seemed to be no signs that she'd been planning to take off with someone. The investigators said they had no evidence to point in one direction more than another, but didn't have anything to point to foul play. There was no crime scene or evidence of a struggle or anything of that nature. Bruce addressed all of the possibilities in an interview. She entered the water, either accidentally or voluntarily. She left her life voluntarily, or she was abducted. The least likely might be the accidental theory because it seemed like, based on the statements from the police, I know Bruce didn't exactly agree, but it seemed that Nancy knew she wouldn't be returning because of her plans at work. And that is sad because she seemed so devoted to her family, her kids, her grandchild, and her work. But like you said, I suppose you never know what someone is going through. My point is, I think it would be an odd coincidence for her to make these arrangements at work and still plan to return. Although it seems a little odd that she would purchase trinkets only to abandon them unless she figured those items would get back to her family one way or another. We've already discussed the suicide theory and touched on the theory that she started a new life, both of which the police found no evidence to support. They even looked into the possibility that Nancy traveled to Australia, considering she had a book about Australia with her belongings, but found nothing during that search. We'd also have to believe that she set up the scene around her car and intentionally abandoned it to make it look a certain way. I also wonder why she would leave cash behind in a scenario like this. Plus, this kind of, not completely, but kind of hinges on the man and woman seen together at the restaurant in Davenport being Nancy. And we don't know that to be the case. Although it is interesting that if not Nancy, then that couple, whoever that was, didn't come forward if they heard about the case, which is possible. Maybe they didn't hear about it. And we talked about this way back in episode 2 in the Barbara Bullock case, where there were the two people apparently up on the mountain that day when Barbara and Jim were hiking. Jim remembered these two young men and they were never able to track them down despite reporting in the media that they were looking for these two men. And you always wonder in situations like that, what happened? I mean, I guess these people just didn't hear about it or they didn't come forward for one specific reason. Obviously, if Nancy took off with this man, he's not going to come forward to report that. And the investigators have said they are surprised they were unable to identify the mystery man since the case received national coverage around the time she disappeared, when it should have been fresh in everyone's mind.
Kind of assuming we don't know because they probably wouldn't release these details, but you know, maybe Nancy and Bruce were going through marital problems and maybe Nancy already found another man who she was going to start a new life with. But that's making some pretty broad leaps here.
I know, but that is kind of the implication when you hear there's this woman who is believed to be Nancy with a man right before she disappears. But we don't even know if that was them. That's what I keep going back to. Then there's foul play. If Nancy met up with this man, maybe he intended to harm her unbeknownst to her, or maybe she was sitting in her folding chair overlooking the water and some random person saw that as an opportunity. I think the former makes more sense because, again, according to the police, she was making arrangements not to return. So it could be that she thought this man could help her leave, or they even had a relationship and were going to leave together, but he harmed her instead. Part of what makes Nancy's disappearance so baffling is that all the theories seem possible. In most disappearances, the police can determine the most likely scenario or nearly rule out theories such as an accident or starting a new life, but they couldn't in Nancy's case.
Yeah, this one's baffling. I mean, I keep going back to those detailed documents that she left prior to her disappearance. You know, assuming that those didn't already exist before and they were new documents that were made in the, you know, days or weeks before she left, they seem like they should be able to point us in a general direction in terms of what happened.
Right. They feel so pivotal in this case. But so does the detail of this mystery man. And that is kind of interesting about this case. You have a couple of details that if they are accurate and true, then they really paint a certain picture, but we don't know with certainty that they are. This case hasn't received much attention in recent years, but I feel for her family. This has to be one of the most difficult losses to experience because it's just so unclear what happened. Could Nancy, if she started a new life, go on for years without being spotted by someone and someone piecing together that she was the missing woman? I mean, she could have gone across the country and be living somewhere else. And yeah, maybe she could pull this off, but it's hard to imagine. Nancy McDuxton is a white female. Her hair was dark blonde and chin length when she disappeared. She has blue eyes, standing at 5'6" and weighing around 125 pounds. Nancy was 52 when she disappeared and will be 74 today. If you have information related to Nancy's disappearance, please call the Belmont Police at 650-595-7400. Definitely let us know your thoughts in this case. I'd love to hear what you all think. So head on over to our Instagram at Key to the Case Podcast. You can also drop a comment on Spotify or email us at keytothecase@gmail.com. That is all for now. We won't be back next week, but we will be back in 2 weeks with a new case. Bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.